she inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. This is Gina Murphy, darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And trust me when I say that what I believe our country needs right now are lots more thinkers. Enough said about that. Thanks so much for joining us and for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And as always, I do a big shout out to our amazing partners that help make this show possible and all of Mrs. Green's World work. The Chapman Automotive Group, their motto for their community green team is doing our share, showing we care. And sometime in the really near future, I am going to interview some of those team members on the show so that you can get a glimpse of their commitment, their impact, and what they have done for the dealerships and for themselves and for our community. So stay tuned for that. For more information, please visit them at chapmantucson.com. Okay, I'm taking a deep breath, and I'm inviting all of you to get ready for another action-packed and very important show today. For the next hour, I have the pleasure of spending time with Nicole Miller, learning about a fascinating subject, biomimicry. When I first heard it, I thought, what the heck is that? And now I'm going to be bold and say I actually understand what biomimicry is. Nicole is the managing director of Biomimicry 3.8, an organization totally and unquestionably dedicated to helping others around the globe use biomimicry, innovate for a better world. They are driven by the fact that life has an incredible amount to teach us about living well on Earth, as evidenced by the fact that Earth has been thriving here for 3.8 billion years. Nicole, a warm and sincere welcome to you, and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to join you today.
I have so much important information to share for all of us, and I'm going to start out with three really incredibly important questions, and simple, but it's a great way to lay the groundwork for this show and for Biomimicry 3.8's purpose for being. And the first question is, what is biomimicry simply defined? It's really not that complex a concept.
It's really not. You know, in the simplest definition, it's the conscious emulation of nature's genius. So looking at the incredible design that's happened over 3.8 years, understanding that on an organism level, on an abstract design level, and taking that to apply that to challenges that we face today.
Got it. And the second part of that question is, how did your journey, your personal journey and your experience lead you to, you have a very important leadership role as the managing director of Biomimicry 3.8. Tell us a little bit about that journey and experience and how it led you to where you are.
Certainly. Well, I should first and foremost say I'm not a biologist, which surprises a lot of people when I talk about B3.8 and what we do. They expect that I am a biologist. But actually, my background comes from sourcing, which includes product design, development, manufacturing, supply chain logistics, and quite a bit of global business transaction is really a big part of my background. And you can imagine that every part of sourcing, product design, development, manufacturing, supply chain has a massive impact on people and the planet.
Totally.
For example, the fashion industry is the second harshest on the environment after the oil and gas industry. Most people don't know that. But the whole kind of consumer product development space is one that has a considerable amount of impact in every aspect of the supply chain. So my background was developing that for companies and looking at trade and commerce and finding ways to kind of make that happen. And so in my role in terms of developing supply chains and developing product, I had to really make sure that everything in our kind of control was socially and environmentally compliant. And what quickly became transparent to me was that no matter what I did, no matter what kind of requirements that I would put on a single factory or a single product, that there was an incredible amount of externalities, either, you know, up the supply chain, so before it even got to the manufacturing facility itself, so the raw materials, say wood for a piece of furniture or leather for a piece of clothing, that I couldn't control. And then you had the downstream externalities. So once it actually left our warehouse and went to a consumer, what that consumer did with the product, how they disposed of it. So all those externalities up and down the supply chain were really outside of my control. And that became really depressing for me because at the time I was responsible for about $35 million worth of product on a quarterly basis coming in to the country and going out into these supply chains. And so for me, it was a personally challenging thing because I knew I was directly in control and part of this impact. So I really got inspired by looking at new innovations. So if we can't control up and down the supply chain, if there's so many externalities out of our control, what if we designed better? What if we thought about this so that you didn't have to go up and down the supply chain, that it was inherently designed in a way that we didn't even have to think about this? And that, for me, when I first learned about biomimicry, that was kind of the personal attachment for me. It was like, wow, this is incredible to have something where if we started out of the gate thinking this way, thinking, you know, how can we design a product that isn't, you know, the heat, beat, and treat methodology that we use, but is actually using the same kind of design principles that nature uses, so we don't have the toxicities, we don't have plastic that lasts 200 years, you know, all these kind of negative externalities, that we can kind of strip those out of the beginning, and we don't have to retroactively manage them.
And it's such the perfect analogy for that is the fashion industry. I have covered it a lot. I go around speaking around the country about sustainability and fashion, the filthy truth. And it speaks volumes about how do we begin to control all of the moving parts of the fashion industry. You know, when I give statistics mm-hmm. about how much water it makes to take a t-shirt, you know, people look at me and they're like, what? And I say, well, you have to think about it. It took a lot of water to grow the cotton, process, you know, whatever whatever material you're using. And I would love Biomimicry 3.8 to get on some solutions in that chain. It is the second filthiest industry in our world. And then there's the whole social justice piece around that with women and children
certainly
being mm-hmm. abused and underemployed, and it's ugly. So in terms of the big mission, it's got your Biomimicry 3.8 has a big and critical mission. Can you just kind of...
We do.
Really do. So just give us the big vision. It's big.
It is a big vision, and it keeps us very full every day.
Yes. You've got a lot of things you got to start working on.
We do. So one of our founders, Janine Benyus, wrote the book Biomimicry, Innovation Inspired by Nature, which really put this concept out there. And shortly after she wrote the book, companies started calling her and saying, hey, I would like to do this. I want to apply this. And, you know, when she wrote the book, she didn't set out to, like, have a consulting firm to do this. And so she started working with companies, and then shortly after was joined by our other co-founder, Dr. Dana Baumeister, who said, if we're going to do this in the world, we can't just go into a company and do it for them and then leave. Like, we need to be teaching people how to do biomimicry. So our company really kind of has two primary aspects of it. One is the professional training in which we teach biomimicry. We have a strategic partnership with Arizona State University, and we have an accredited 2-year master's degree program with them that teaches kind of the in-depth of biomimicry and actually how to apply it to your career. And then we also do immersion workshops just to kind of get people out of their everyday setting into nature, and we do this all over the world. We've recently done this in South Africa. We've done it in Costa Rica. We do it here in the U.S. And we really take people out of their everyday environment, get them into an environment with multiple learning opportunities from multiple kind of aspects of an ecosystem to learn how it functions, how it's symbiotic, how does that ecosystem function, and what are the different organisms, what are the plants and species that all kind of make it tick and work. And by doing that, by getting people out and learning these things, we kind of teach them that, and then we kind of take them through a process of applying that to their challenges. So a lot of people who participate in our immersion programs are from companies, from corporate companies, also academia as well, but really looking at, okay, what is the challenge that you're having? And then taking everything that you've learned in the ecosystem around you and start to find different strategies and solutions. So that's a one-week intensive that we do, and we do that throughout the year. And those really kind of fall underneath our professional training and getting people kind of educated about what this field is and how it can inform innovation and how it can really lead to a whole new awareness and appreciation for nature. So oftentimes companies and people, I think, view nature as a resource for which we extract. And a key fundamental part of our teaching is that as you learn all this amazing phenomenon that happens in nature, it becomes something that we appreciate and therefore value in a completely different way than we had before.
And needless to say, in 10 years of this journey for me, I have visited a lot of websites. I have talked to some of the most innovative, inspirational, and just incredible people on the planet today. And I know that crafting words for a website and for a mission, it starts with the mission, of course. And I told you this off air. I could spend a lot of time at your website. It's not just beyond visually pleasing, but it's self-directed, it's intuitive. And three of the words that are part of the essence of who you are: innovation, education, and inspiration. So I thought it would be great to go through some of those examples. And, oh, by the way, highest praise to your website designers. I pride myself on preparing for the show and giving a lot of hours to it. And I think I could have just gone to your website and started asking questions, but I did not do that. I did my work. So in terms of innovation, and this is the part that just blows me away and fascinates me, can you talk a bit about how this is the application of knowledge part, how you looked to beetles and sea cucumbers to improve liquid dispersal to help seventh generation with the packaging designs. I mean, it's fun. It's fascinating. It would be great to share those ideas with children. How do you learn from the beetle and the sea cucumber to make our world more sustainable?
Yeah, well, it's a great segue because I talked about our professional training aspect as one, right. And then our second is really our innovation work, which is primarily with companies looking at challenges related to products. Most of our work is within the CPG, the consumer product goods space, or the built environment space. And we're just now getting into organizational design. So looking at leadership aspects, like decentralized communication, how does that actually function in different organisms, and then how can we apply that to building a effective communication system for companies that are virtually based? So we're just kind of getting into that space. So I'll hold that for further. But in terms of innovation, and the example that you gave, how we do that is really when we engage with a company, they typically have a problem that they come to us with. And so that problem, you know, could be getting the last drop out of packaging, or, you know, how do we reduce the size of packaging so that we can maximize efficiency in shipping and concentrate the materials so that people still get the same amount of product. So it could be, you know, something as specific as that, or it could be very broad. They don't really know if there's just like a general challenge in terms of, you know, maybe removing an ingredient or removing what might be a toxicity or an ingredient that maybe they don't want to have. So it can be broad, but essentially where we go is we understand the challenge that they come to us with, and we break that down, we unpack that to find the functional challenge. And the functional challenge is the key aspect of application to, it's the key aspect of going to the biological literature to then apply to your existing challenge. So for example, Apple might say, okay, we need a new iPhone. So we wouldn't say, how does nature design the new iPhone, or what does the next iPhone in nature look like? We might say, how does nature geolocate? Because that's the function that's being performed. So that's our first step, is getting down to the functional level. And what's kind of interesting is, in a handful of companies, just going through that process alone is a really huge awareness process for companies, because it really forces them to get to the core of what their issue is. And in the process of unpacking that, sometimes that's been illuminating enough for a company to even realize that they had the solution for their challenge already in place. They just didn't even understand what the function was. But that's the first step, is identifying the functional challenge.
Okay. So then you have, and I mean, I have so many questions that are coming to mind. For example, the processes that you help them describe and articulate are often invisible. They just came about, and nobody's really looking at them to analyze them and to see what functionalities can be changed and what maybe a minor modification in X would result in, you know, a lower carbon footprint, a smaller carbon footprint, or things like that. Is that the application of that knowledge, looking at it, learning from it, and then modifying it?
It's a couple things. It's taking the functional challenge, and then that's what allows us, enables us, at really, to go to the biological literature to start to find
right
strategies.
Got
and
it.
Solutions. So when you talked about like the poppy seed flower and the beetle wings, you know, for packaging, it's that function that we're trying to achieve. So in the example of, you know, containing liquids, you know, what different organisms, what different species, what different kind of examples that we can find, and that could be anything on, you know, a molecular level to very broad abstract, that allows us to achieve that function. And I'm trying to think if the what could you use the seventh generation example, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's one where. And we did a similar one with Natura, which is also a cosmetics company, where we're trying to find different examples in nature where this could inform the actual product design itself. And so for that one, there was one, it was a Palomo, you know, the orange?
Yes.
The Palomo orange.
Right.
So that was partly because that could drop from a very high level, and the inside contents of that orange remained intact. So that had a function of protecting the packaging. The packaging itself protected what's inside, but then also what was kind of multifunctional from this example is the pulp itself was an example of shape in terms of how to get the last drop out. If you shape something like a pulp seed, that shape and structure of it allowed all liquid to flow out in a very effective way. So what's really kind of incredible, and I'm all over the board here, but it's really incredible.
No, you're not. It's the whole glory of this, and I get it. Like, I'm tracking.
Okay, good. But where I'm going with this is there's multifunctional design in nature. And so in that example is a great one where you have when we're looking at a packaging challenge, where you're looking at protecting contents, you can use that Palomo as an example of how its exterior design is to protect the interior product, but then also how the interior aspects of it allow liquid efficiency to flow in a way that we hadn't emulated before. So that's an example of, in terms of like taking the function, figuring out what we're trying to solve for, and then going to the biological strategies, going to the literature to find a myriad of examples that we can start to distill down to find really specific applications.
Got it. I mean, and again, I speak to the website. Everybody, I cannot believe this. First break. Why did that seem like 5 minutes? Everybody, stay here with me. More from Nicole Miller, Managing Director, Biomimicry 3.8. We're going to be talking about many things, education, inspiration, and so many great examples. Stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being with us. Joining us for this hour is Nicole Miller. Nicole is the Managing Director of Biomimicry 3.8, and as the Managing Director, she's responsible for got a big job for strategic direction of Biomimicry 3.8, a company internationally recognized as a leader in biomimicry innovation, consulting, professional training, and thought leadership. She also works closely with clients and partners to identify the best opportunities to effectively integrate and apply biomimicry. Her professional experience, which she mentioned at the top of the show, in environmental and social compliance, product development, and a global supply chain management supports her efforts to introduce biomimicry as a platform to mitigate risk, build resilience, and advance innovation. And think of those three things: mitigate risk, build resilience, and advance innovation. And I encourage everybody to give themselves the pleasure of visiting the website, biomimicry.net, and follow them on Facebook at Biomimicry 3. I think it's just 3.8. If you put in 3.8, it's there. And on Twitter, the same thing, Biomimicry 3.8. Nicole, thanks again for being with us. And
before, it's my pleasure to join
you. It's just so awesome. And I was thinking about it, you know, I really did wax poetic about your website and going to the why of that. So there's a picture of, you know, a sea cucumber, and then there's a bottle to the right of dispersing liquid. And I'm like, yeah, well, sea cucumbers, the non-scientist here is making this conclusion, they disperse liquid. So it's studying what occurs in nature and how to use that application. It's just such a perfect example and why I love it. And there's another one on the website about the abalone shell, which is really like armor. And I do, if you know about this in a little detail, how it helped provide Shell with fresh ideas and new approaches in oil and gas. Like, are you kidding me? I was reading that and I'm like, wow, this is really important, people.
And that's what's really, I think, so fascinating is that
it is.
There's hundreds of thousands of organisms. They all have a specific function and role that they play, and they all do these kind of incredible things to kind of survive and thrive in our planet. And so we have, one of the things that we like to say is, you know, a research lab that you could never afford is
ever
actually in your backyard.
Right.
Right. You know, so that's one of the things that we often work with with our clients is to really kind of help them understand the vast amount of innovation opportunity that's out there because of this, you know, there is 3.8 billion years worth of successful R&D in nature. And we haven't found a challenge yet that nature hasn't directly or indirectly dealt with that gives us some starting point for shifting the lens of how we're going to solve the challenge.
And I want to read from the website because this is, to me, all about impact and just getting it down to that nugget of what you do. And then I have to ask you, like, it just blew me away. So Shell invited Biomimicry to lead a 3-day, I was like, What ideation workshop to spark new approaches to carbon sequestration, no impact drilling, and filtering oil from water? And I want to repeat, 3-day. And over time, Shell advanced 9 of the 17 project ideas from that workshop, such as off-the-shelf biomedic products and design concepts for specific engineers to develop. So my question was, after I read that, like, who was in that room? And look what came out of a 3-day workshop. Like, to me, it's like, that's years of research. How does something like that get facilitated with those kind of impressive results?
Well, it's a really fun, that's a really fun example for us, because for them, and oftentimes what happens is with our work, we do workshop because that's the best way to really kind of, one, get people aligned around what crazy concept is, you know. And what's funny is people often refer to it as new, but biomimicry has been around, you know, Leonardo da Vinci. It's not new. And so we have to often kind of help people understand that, like, you're not getting into, like, this risky space.
Right.
You're getting into a space that companies have used, you know, at least since we've been doing this for 15 years. So companies have been looking to nature for inspiration for 15 years, not only through us and multiple other, you know, there's a handful of other companies that do this as well. So I think just this kind of idea that it's new, you know, and getting people into a room, into a workshop to understand that it's not, that they're in a safe space. They're in, you know, safety in numbers, that other industries are applying this.
Right.
And so that's often where we start, is to really help people understand what it is, align around the terminology, because most, you know, we don't have, there's not a lot of companies that have a biologist on staff. Some do, you know, maybe pharmaceuticals or, you know, others that have a direct kind of connection to planet, but most don't. And so a lot of times what we're doing is doing kind of this orienting workshops to kind of get people introduced to this concept, aligned around what it is. And then from there, what we do is take, typically they're multi- and cross-functional disciplinary teams, so that we've got people from, you know, in this case, you know, from marketing, from legal, from finance, from, you know, all aspects of the company. Because to move a concept forward, you want all stakeholders involved in, one, identifying what the true kind of challenges are, but then also being able to kind of shepherd the innovation and kind of concepts forward. So in this case with Shell that you gave in the kind of 3-day workshop, we broke out into different groups, and different groups worked on challenges throughout the company and ideated around what those specific challenges are. And part of our work is a little bit challenging for us to talk about because so much of it is intellectual property specific to that company.
The cone of silence is in effect.
The cone of silence, yes. But I think one of the key things that came out of there that you read was these new product ideas, because what biomimicry brings is an entirely new way of looking at the problem and a new solution set for that problem. So in this case, when we're talking about, you know, sequestering new innovations for sequestering carbon, calcium carbonate research, calcium oxalate research, mineralization pathways, going beyond mineralization, like all those different strategies that exist in nature then, and giving those to the Shell team to then talk about their problem in an entirely new context, enabled them to come up, one, to see the problem in a different way, but then to come up with new strategies based on those references.
And, you know, it's so infrequent that in our everyday lives, we have the opportunity to be in a safe space and just create and think and innovate. So I can see how a 3-day workshop with the right people and outside voices can really, I mean, that's a long time to start the synapses connecting and the creativity rolling. Mm-hmm. But it's still pretty impressive that 9 of the project ideas went from the idea stage to the implementation stage for products and, you know, specific design concepts. It's that's a big number to come out of a three-day workshop. It was like, wow. And I'm sure there was a lot of work after that, but it's still quite impressive. So I don't even know if you can answer this question. And of course, I never put guests on the spot, but are there times when you can remember that some of the challenges that are put before you and your staff and your team of people seem insurmountable? I mean, is it daunting or is it almost always exciting and you want to, you know, get on it?
I would say it can be both, right?
Yes.
It can be.
What?
One of the things that we see happen, because biomimicry isn't a, you can't walk in the door of like our organization and say, this is my problem, tell me the solution and guarantee me that solution. Like, we can't do that. So it's not a guarantee, right? It's kind of this unknown.
It's a creative process, yeah.
Exactly. But what's kind of come from that is companies then say, okay, well, we've been working on this challenge for 10 years. We've spent $10 million. We've exhausted all of our efforts. So, okay, we'll give it a shot. Like, what do we have to lose? Kind of, you know, thinking is kind of one entry into biomimicry is that everything else has been explored. So let's try this. And in that process, we've often get, and we even pitch this to companies. We say, you know, give us your holy grail. Like, what is your biggest challenge? And let us see if we can try to solve it using biomimicry. So we kind of even, you know, we ask for it a little bit, but we then at the same time get so excited about, okay, if this is the holy grail, if we could actually solve this, then this is really cool. You know, we can bring an entirely new division to a company, or we can revolutionize an industry even by changing the thinking.
Yes.
So for us, that it's really exciting and daunting at the same time. Like, our work is not easy work. I mean, it's definitely like, oftentimes we're pushing a boulder up a mountain for sure. But when we get to the top and you see all the opportunities and kind of there's really platform technologies that can emerge out of a single concept. And that's when you start to kind of really see the power and the opportunity that it can provide.
And the biggest thing you said earlier in the show about how many examples there are in nature I forget what number you mentioned. So when you have a challenge and you want to learn from nature, you have the great opportunity to decide and hone in on what are you going to study in nature. And a perfect example, again, kudos for the practicality and understanding and the, whatever I'm trying to say, the so easy to grasp concepts presented on your website. So engineers, how to build strong buildings that will help be more resilient with the massive flooding we have seen with rising sea levels, I could say, wow, yeah, that's an important one. But then it goes to, so who picked the mangroves to study? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's lots of examples. Mm-hmm. And I was actually thinking about beaver dams. So maybe I could contribute in those workshops, but you know, beaver dams are impenetrable. And so you learn from the mangroves, but it's like, I guess I want to try and get a sense from how do you get from the question to, it's a tough question, to picking how does nature build? What are we going to look at to develop more resilient buildings?
Well, and that is our brilliant team of research analysts.
They've got to be.
They are. They're incredible. And that's, you know, everyone is from, you know, biologist, engineer, chemist, really broad background there, and when you need that. But really, what they do is I think our work in this space has probably been the longest. And so when you've got a team of people who've been doing this for 15 years, they're pretty kind of dialed into where to start.
Right.
So,
right.
But essentially what they do is to comb all the biological literature. So we have a full text database of all the research that's ever existed out there. And our team essentially combs that to find what's relevant to the challenge. And so part of our job in working with our clients is to make sure, and this is why I said we really unpack that challenge to get to the function, because we need to understand not only the function, but like what are the operating conditions? What are the non-negotiables? What does success look like? So we go through that whole process to really understand what this needs to be. And those kind of data points, those kind of design kind of guidelines, so to speak, really help us in terms of going to the literature, extrapolating what organisms, what ecosystems, whatever it may be, that we can glean insights from to then start the process of distilling that information. And a key part of that is not only looking at the organisms themselves. So you could have, 10 different organisms that all complete a similar process perform a similar process or function. But instead of emulating like that single organism itself, you can look at how they're all doing that process or function and then distill the abstract design principle from that. It might be an aspect ratio. It might be a myriad of things it could be, but it's that abstract that you then begin emulating, not the single organism.
And the another impressive piece, I mean, I sound like I'm going to be starting the Biomimicry 3.8 fan club, but there is a lot of respect on my part for all of these years of what I've done to really get my head around the process and the practice. And another thing that impressed me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, yes, you involve people in these workshops and creating solutions and on and on and on, but what I feel is also accurate to say is that you teach the practice of biomimicry. So it's definitely a ripple effect, a pebble in the pond. You teach people how to be hopeful and curious and passionate so that they're change makers out there looking at nature for solutions. Is that an accurate assessment of the professional training part of this? That's not just about one project, but about how they go out and conquer these challenges.
Exactly. Because if we work with a company, we go in and help solve their challenge, then it's kind of like it's the analogy of teach a man to fish.
Yes.
So we go in and we do biomimicry strategies, solutions, help them for one day or for a week or for 15 years. Then we've done our job, but then how do we help empower them to continue this? And so our professional training does that. It helps people really understand how to go through that process I just described of understanding the functional challenge, going to the biological literature, identifying strategies, extrapolating that into an actual concept that can then be prototyped and developed and designed. So that whole process is not easy at all. And it can take years, and it can take investment, and it can take, blood, sweat, and tears, like any, product or company launch would take. And so by teaching people, we're supporting not only our work, but we're supporting the meme of biomimicry and the ability for people to kind of do that in-house with or without our support.
And it just, I lit up. It's starting to ask what I call the how questions. We observe nature, a lot of us, but we don't ask, how do they do that? How does that happen? Why does this flower close? How come this only blooms at a certain time, and integrating those? I mean, we enjoy nature, hopefully most of us, but asking those how questions is, to me, it's going to be ever more important than it has been in our lifetime, because I don't think we're doing a very good job in general with some of the things that keep me up nights when it comes to the challenges we face as a planet and as a country. So when we come back after this break, we're going to be talking about dreaming a new future. And I want to read some quotes from that, again, from that magnificent website. And then I'd like to ask you some questions, some personal questions about what excites you And what do you believe are some of the biggest challenges we face as a country? And how can biomimicry 3.8 be a solution to those? So everybody, stay here with me. I just am so blown away with Nicole Miller and the organization Biomimicry 3.8. We'll be right back with a lot more important things to share about why it's so important that we know about their work. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being a part of this world. We are spending this hour with Nicole Miller, Managing Director of Biomimicry 3.8, an organization dedicated to helping others around the globe use biomimicry, innovate for a better world. They are driven by the fact that life has an incredible amount to teach us about living well on Earth. And the evidence is the fact that Earth has been thriving here for 3.8 billion years. Nicole has used her experience to support efforts to introduce biomimicry as a platform to mitigate risk, build resilience, and advance innovation. She also works closely with clients and partners, obviously works closely with them, to identify the best opportunities to effectively integrate and apply biomimicry. And Nicole, really, thanks so much for being with us and for your unbelievably great and informative answers. It inspires me. So let's talk about it. It's really been just so incredibly enjoyable for me, and that's part of why I do this. But I worked with at-risk kids for most of my career. And then, you know, I woke up one day and said, I have to be Mrs. Green, which is a story for another day. But one of the things that shocked me, coming from a loving, caring family, is that kids on certain ends of the socioeconomic spectrum, they didn't dream. And when I worked closely with them, they didn't dream. Like, their dream, literally, some of the most at-risk kids, their dream was, I hope I don't go to jail. So that's how they, you know, it became so apparent to me how important dreaming is. And the quote from your website, dreaming a new future into being begins with a simple question. What would nature do here? And I thought, off air, this is so sick. WWND, hashtag, what would nature do? It's like that I think in hashtag is somewhat troublesome. But anyway, why is it so important to encourage people to dream now more than ever?
Oh, you know, this is something I think we face regularly, and particularly in the work that we do. It's really depressing when you look at
it
all
is.
These statistics.
Thank you for
around
saying that. It's true.
And when you, it is. And when you look around these statistics around the environment and impacts of companies and what's happening to people and, you know, wars being fought, it's like, it's really overwhelming and it's really depressing. And what is so amazing about the work that we do is that it comes from a place of hope and inspiration.
I love that.
In a place when everything is very kind of trying to be less bad, this is more good. And this is giving us something that we can aspire to. When you look at living systems in nature, and you look at how trees function, and you look at all these kind of brilliant things that happen, it's very awe-inspiring. And why I think it's so important is it does connect us. We're more and more becoming removed from nature, and these urban settings and places where people actually aren't, you know, I'm so lucky I live in Montana, and nature is in our backyard, literally everywhere, but not everyone has access to that. So the more that we can educate people around this amazing hope and awe and inspiration that comes from nature, the more we get people outside, understanding, appreciating it, valuing it. And I think that's kind of where the dreaming ties into it. And it's in this place of hope, which I think we all desperately need right now to kind of push us into the next level of kind of caretaking and solutions and strategies that enable and embody that.
And the seat that I hold sometimes gives me the most wonderful glimpses at innovation and change and how to get people more involved. And I'm a big fan of the Western National Parks Association, and their headquarters is here in Tucson. And one of the things they did was they opened a huge facility in downtown LA to help kids, even if they can't go to, you know, Yellowstone or whatever, they can have virtual experiences. They can learn from nature. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's like bringing that message to the inner city in Los Angeles, when most kids' experience could be, you know, a concrete building or a very unsafe neighborhood. So it's those things give me hope as well. What about...
It's an entire field.
It is.
It's an entire field called biophilia, which is about bringing nature in. And like Google, Apple, the campuses, you know, these like large kind of tech companies and campuses, universities, other places are actually using this concept to inspire people to be more creative and happier and healthier in their workplace. So there's an entire field around it called biophilia. There's an entire building standard called WELL that's around this, where we're kind of bringing nature in and we're using it to become healthier in our environment and indirectly and actually directly more creative.
And it helps morale and it helps work attendance. I mean, the list goes on. Talk about the ripple effect.
It does go on.
Yes, if you create a healthy working environment with any, even access to windows. I mean, if I die and go to hell, I'm going to be in a cubicle with no light because I can't do it. I mean, it literally shuts me down. I have never been able to take that, fortunately, I've never had to, but it's like, no, I cannot do that. And that's the effect on my psyche. And, you know, the message to me that you give is so important. And like for me, that sometimes I deal with tough subjects. After I do filthy fashion interviews, it's like, it's daunting to me. How can we have hope? Because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's about greed. It's about profit. It's about ignorance. And so I go and spend time in nature. It's the only thing that I find that feeds me and keeps me, you know, getting up the next day and making a difference for the people whose lives I have the privilege of touching. So what about you? What excites you the most? I mean, everything you've answered is reflective of your passion and your excitement, but you have a big job because you're surrounded by brilliant, creative people. You face big, bad questions begging to be answered by you and your team. I think that's fair to say. And as the managing director, I'm sure you have to be the inspirational leader at time. Tell us about that. What's it like to be Nicole Miller in that big job?
Oh, my. Well, you know, there's days where it is really overwhelming, to be quite honest.
Yes, it has to be. And thank you for being honest. This is not all kumbaya. It's like,
this is not all kumbaya. It's really tough work. Some of the challenges we face are most companies are subject to immediate shareholder returns. So it means they need a quick win. Companies want strategies and solutions, you know, without investing time or money. So they want answers without time and money, and they need them quickly.
Right.
You know, so those are challenges that we face a lot. And then we also face challenges where, you know, you get a particular person within a company is really excited about biomimicry, but then they have to kind of run it up the flagpole and get sign off from 15, 20 other people. And they're not as excited about it because they don't see the value in it. So a lot of my work is helping people see the value in biomimicry and why biomimicry is important and why now. And that can be overwhelming in a field where industry is driven by immediate returns and is driven by externalities and has negative externalities that often, like I talked about earlier, are outside of their control.
Right.
And they're
right.
Looking at their immediate. What inspires me is that there are companies out there that get that they're in this for the long term. They're not trying to create a single product. They're not trying to create a single process. They're looking at, how can my company function like an ecosystem? How can we be healthy in that we're giving back just as much as the forest next door? And this is one project that we're working on right now, which is this whole concept around factory as a forest. And that, and we're piloting this with one of our longest standing clients, which is Interface. And this is this project where, how can the manufacturing facility be functionally indistinguishable from a forest? So how can it help maintain biodiversity? It's incredible.
Oh,
and this is really, this is from the vision of our founder, Janine Benyus, who really put that statement out there that for us to ultimately achieve sustainability, we have to be functionally indistinguishable from the forest next door. And that kind of really sparked this whole thinking around factory as a forest. And we're scaling that. We're looking at not only factories, but how can we do this at universities, at campuses, at corporate headquarters. And Interface has really been, they're just a tremendous company. And when I talk about inspiration, they're one that inspires me in the sense that they get that they're not just about making carpet tile. They're actually focused on reversing climate change. And that's their mission, and making carpet tiles is just a means to do that. And so it's companies like Interface, it's companies like Patagonia, it's companies that are really investing in the long term of what their role is in terms of doing more good and using business as a vehicle to do that. That inspires me.
It inspires me. It gave me goosebumps because these are people and companies that can really move the green needle forward because just of their size and the level of their impact. So it's that type of innovation and desire for change inspires me. And another critical part that I want to reflect on is so many times in the science world, which this is, the message stays inside and the solutions stay inside. But what I admire and respect about Biomimicry 3.8, and did I mention that I saw Janine at the Bioneers Conference? And literally, she was with my friend Toby Herzlich, and I was like, Toby, can you introduce me to her? Because it was a moment that I remember. But to get back on track, you bring the messages out. You can imagine how I got excited when I saw under the buzz section of your website that you're going to be at Green Biz next week. Well, I'm going to be there, and you can be sure I called Kelly, our show producer, and I said, Kelly, they're going to be at Green Biz next week. I mean, Joel McCower to me is another, guru, thought leader, inspirational human being. So I think that's of such value to talk about for a minute. It's not just learning these things, but sharing the message.
Right. And that's a big part of getting more people to adopt this. And I think the role that businesses play in change in our society in terms of social and environmental impact is really the driving force, especially now more than ever. And so the more that we can do storytelling, I heard this line, like, people don't like to be sold product. They like to hear stories. So focus
so
on the latter.
Oh my God.
And there's so many amazing stories over our 15 years of work. And this, can stem from, we've had examples of companies that came to us and while they didn't find a solution, they figured out that the path that they were on, and this was like a 10-year path that they had been on, was completely the wrong trajectory that they needed to take, and that by understanding and learning from nature, it course corrected them in a way that, in with a lens that they would have otherwise never had. So I want to actually reinforce something that's really important, and that we tend to focus on these products that come out, you know, like
right.
We see a lot, you know, like the Kingfisher and the Bullet Train and Lotus Effect and paint and, you know, carbon and plastics. Like, we get really kind of stuck on the emulate and a physical product at the output. But so much of our work over the past 15 years and so much of the success that we have seen is just simply bringing and introducing this lens and the fundamental shift in thinking that has a ripple effect that we could never measure in our wildest dreams. We'd love to be able to, but it's so vast and it's so large. And I think that's the most important thing, is that people don't get hung up on trying to create and emulate, you know, a single thing to create a new product, but that by opening this conversation, by looking at nature, looking at all the innovation that's happening, you're fundamentally giving yourself an entirely new set of tools, an entirely new solution set that would otherwise never existed. And I think that's the kind of big kind of immediate win when we talk about our ripple of impact and the return on investment. Like, that's it, is that when we come in and we start working with people, there is an immediate aha, there's an immediate excitement. Right now, I think it's 70% of people are disengaged in their work. When we come in and talk about biomimicry and that people can learn from nature, you better believe that that engagement instantly turns around. And that's something that is really kind of exciting to watch and really inspiring as well.
No kidding. I mean, it makes the bad days the good days. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And another piece that I think is so critical and that you have done successfully. So what does helping innovators solve these problems with Brilliance of Nature, what kind of impact, measurable? And you do have information about that by 2030, bio-inspired products and services will generate $1.6 trillion to the global GDP. And it's like, that's an important piece too, because I think people often, you know, make the assumption that being green or living more sustainable or doing things more sustainably always has a negative financial impact, and it's so not true. It's exploding that myth. So in our very short time that we have left, it just blows me away. I say that sincerely. What do you have a call to action for our listeners? I mean, it can be overwhelming to many of us. Do you have an action or one thing that you'd advise our listeners to do to become more a part of the solution, to become more engaged and better able to face the challenges that we are facing, whether we see it or not? There's a heavy duty responsibility I laid on you in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, a call to action. One, obviously, it would be to get outside.
Yes.
To start appreciating. And it's being like uncomfortable. For me, as a not an entomologist or biologist, I was in a workshop with some of our team in Costa Rica where I had giant beetles crawling on me. It was not, you know, what I would think of as fun. But once I started to appreciate the beauty of those beetles, I was like, wow, this is fascinating. So what became scary and kind of icky or gross becomes fascinating. So I really invite people to get outside their comfort zone, you know, test the spider web, see how strong it is, you know, see the UV reflectant. I mean, that kind of stuff is what really gets you excited about it. And that is, I would say, kind of the first thing to do is just to start that process. And then next is to really look at where you have impact. Consumers, and particularly women, drive 80% of the purchases in consumer power. So we have a lot of power. So when you're making your purchasing decisions, ask yourself, what is the impact? Where are these materials come from? Who's producing this? What are their commitments to the environment, to people, planet? And that puts a lot of power in the consumer's hands. So I invite people to really, really dig into knowing where their products that they're purchasing come from and the companies that they're supporting with their wallet.
What a positive note on which to end. And once again, thanks for being with us. And all of you, thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. Be the change.